It's game time.
Quiet, please. I am analyzing.
That's it, man. Game over, man. It's game over.
Is the next step the transplantation of the human brain?
Ballsy. Stupid, but ballsy.
Stand by for action.
Welcome to the party, pal.
Okay.
Remember, we're not dealing with an intelligence on our own level.
Bring in the logic probe!
Ooh!
End of line.
This is Ethan with the Gamers Haven podcast, and I managed to sit down and talk with Mr. Josh Roby, a freelancer who's currently doing quite a lot of work on the new Margaret Weiss Productions Smallville role-playing game. So sit back and enjoy a nice long review with him. He has a lot of information to give us. As always, you can hit our website at gamershavenpodcast.com and hit our Amazon store to see a selection of some of Josh Roby's products. Right now it's just the Smallville stuff that I've got in there, but please hit our site and support the Gamers Haven in any way you can. Meanwhile, just sit back and relax and enjoy the interview.
This podcast is brought to you by FRP Games, an online retailer specializing in all kinds of gaming products. Please visit www.forplenetwork.com in order to gain access to thousands of unique items available only at FRP Games.
This is the Vorpal Network.
This is Ethan with the Gamers Haven podcast, and I'm here to tell you about CantCon. For those of us who can't con, there's CantCon. CantCon will be held at the Johnson County Community College Regnier Center in Overland Park, Kansas, in the Capitol Federal Conference Room on July 9th through the 11th between 8 a.m. and 10 p.m. There will be RPG events, board game events, card game events, miniatures games, as well as open gaming tables for impromptu sessions. Pre-registration is open currently, and if you pre-register, you'll receive an additional chance to win swag at CantCon. We have over $2,500 worth of prizes to give away over the course of the convention, and we hope to give it all away. In addition, if you pre-register, you can get a 3-day pass for only $25. If you're only interested in coming one day at a time, you can for only $10 a day. There will be registration available at the door, but you'll have less of a chance to win free prizes that way. Join us at Johnson County Community College for CantCon on July 9th through the 11th, from beginning at 8 a.m. daily. Visit www.cantcon.com for more information. Well, this is Ethan with the Gamers Haven podcast, and I am sitting here with Mr. Josh Roby.
Hello.
I'm pronouncing that right.
Yes, you are.
Excellent. And Mr. Josh Roby here is, of course, a game designer who is currently hard at work on the Smallville RPG from that's Margaret Weiss Productions, correct?
Correct.
Excellent. And they kind of snuck that one out the door with us. They announced a few things a couple months back, and the Smallville one just completely passed me by. Did not see it at all.
Well, Margaret Weiss has got two big projects in parallel development right now. It's got Smallville, which I'm on, and Leverage, which
That's the one I remember hearing about. And
yes, and Leverage, they were really gung-ho on the publicity because they were hitting the first Leverage Con.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Cleverly named Con. and they got the quick start job out for that, and a lot of the fanfare was reserved for Leverage, which was great. Mm-hmm. And now Smallville is getting just about done, so Thus, I am on a podcast.
Excellent, excellent. And are you a freelancer for them, or do you work directly with Margaret Weiss now?
I'm a freelancer.
You are a freelancer. Okay. Well, let's go ahead and get started on the sort of the initial questions I ask. Is how did you get into the gaming hobby? How did you first end up picking up the dice?
Oh yeah, back when I was 13, my first game was actually Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles and Other Strangeness.
Excellent. We're not huge Palladium fans over here, but we love that one from them. Yes.
Oh yeah, because that was the best one.
Yes, it's the good one they put out.
Yes, it's because it's fantastic. So I started there. Then I moved over into Heroes Unlimited. And then
I will confess, I'm a huge comic geek and a huge superhero dork. I had Heroes Unlimited specifically just so I could look at the superpowers in it. So,
yeah. Oh yeah, I had a fantastic giant list. And I remember both with Turtles and with Heroes Unlimited, somehow when I was 14, I totally missed the line that says roll or pick.
Oh yeah.
Because at our table it was, you have to roll.
Uh-huh.
Always have to roll. There's no picking. You have to roll. And then I recently recovered the books and I opened them up and I was astounded to find out that all of these random tables start with roll or pick. And just the game was completely different than how we were playing it.
Yep, yep. But sometimes you got some interesting powers that way.
Oh, yeah. Some real insect control, or even better, mollusk control.
Yes, mollusk control,
and
I believe.
Super speed.
That was, I just had an interview not too long ago with Steve Kenson, and that was his personal favorite from Heroes Unlimited, was mollusk control. So.
Oh, yeah. Can't go wrong with that.
Yes. Well, what is it you, how did you get actually into doing game design and working in the industry, as it were?
When I was, flash forward like 10 more years.
Mm-hmm.
Excuse me. And I actually, my first freelancing for role-playing games was with DreamPod 9 and Tribate,
okay.
And myself and a few of my friends pretty much became the writing group for that line. And I like to say that I'm personally responsible for driving that line into the ground.
Oh, yeah.
Because we did the last year of the game, and then the game kind of went away.
Uh-oh. Well, I wouldn't put that little last bit on your resume. That would probably...
It went away for other reasons, but
yeah,
it amuses me to claim victory over killing it.
Sort of like how George Clooney claims that he and Arnold Schwarzenegger killed the Batman franchise.
Yeah, there you go.
And he takes exactly. pride in that, so that's good.
I try and always find something that I can take pride in.
Now I did sort of interrupt you a little bit earlier. You moved on from Heroes Unlimited. What did you go to after that?
Well, from Heroes Unlimited, then we went into GURPS, and then I was a big GURPS head for a long, long time.
Mm-hmm.
And then I got into World of Darkness stuff, exclusively online in Mushes, which are online chat-based role-playing.
I remember them, yes.
Yeah, and I did that for years and years. We ran our own mush for a while that was called Something Wicked that was set in Santa Barbara, which is kind of an odd match for the World of Darkness.
Yeah.
but it parts of it worked. And then from there, I fell into indie games.
Mm-hmm.
And made my own indie games, which was first Full Light, Full Steam, which is a steampunk space opera sort of thing.
Right.
And then Sons of Liberty, which is American Revolution, clock punk, gonzo craziness.
Vicious dogs.
Vicious dogs.
Yes.
So just in case, for the record, Sons of Liberty, which is a steampunk American Revolution, or a clockpunk American Revolution, and it's crazy gonzo over the top, absolutely ridiculous. It's the game where you find yourself saying, and then I ride the moose out the stained glass window and onto the Zeppelin below. And it works, and it all happens so fast, you don't usually notice you're saying such things.
Yes, and is that one available at all?
Oh, yeah. Both of those are available at Calisti Press, at Indie Press Revolution, RPG Now, etc.
Excellent. All right. Well, now we move on to, obviously, you said you worked for some DreamPod 9, did some Tribate stuff. Where'd you go to after that?
Actually, I did my own thing for...
straight to doing the Sons of Liberty and all that stuff?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
In November, Cam Banks, who's the line editor for Margaret Weiss, contacted me and said, I've got some writing and design work for a new game that we're doing. I can't tell you what the game is, but would you like to be involved? So I said, yes, I will take any work that anyone wants to offer me.
Right.
and thus it was revealed. It's a Smallville game, which I had never seen before.
Mm-hmm.
So I immediately started watching episodes and reading old synopses. So I plowed through. We jacked our Netflix queue up to like 8 discs a month or something ridiculous. and I just plowed through, I think, 4 seasons of the show. To get some understanding under my belt, and I read synopses of the much earlier stuff. And it turns out it's a fun little show.
Yeah. And, I am familiar with Smallville. I've watched about the first 5 seasons of it, and I have fallen way behind, obviously.
It's really interesting because the show now is very different from where it started.
Yeah, from where it began.
Which is pretty cool as far as the premise of the show goes, because it starts with Clark, and I think they're freshmen or sophomore in high school.
Yeah, they're freshmen in high school.
Yeah, and now they're like 20-something yuppies in Metropolis. And it's really neat to see the change in focus as they go season to season.
How did you tackle turning this TV series that's been on now for 9 years, going on 10 years, how did you tackle really turning into that into a role playing game?
Well, first of all, it's a giant chunk of continuity to digest, so much happens over the course of 9 seasons. It was a large task, let's say, but. What we really did was we stripped it down to the essentials of the show, and we kind of looked at what is this show about and what does it do consistently every episode.
Mm-hmm.
And we kind of came up with sort of 2 essential things, which is the characterization of the ensemble cast, and what we like to call the Clark, tell me your secret problem.
Right.
So the characterization thing, it's interesting because in any television show, you write it so that the characters characterize each other,
right?
You have character A say and do things that highlight who character B is.
Mm-hmm.
On Smallville, they do this by pointing fingers at each other and shouting, generally. So you have Clark barging into Lex's office and saying, I know that you did it, Lex. And so we really needed to have a mechanic that did something like that. So that's what became our relationship mechanics.
Okay.
And then the other big chunk is the tell me your secret Clark problem, which is we needed to design the game such that no one can, if you're playing Clark, no one can force you with a die roll to tell them that you're an alien from Krypton, because that kills the whole show.
Sure.
But we did still want to have some social mechanics. social mechanics are kind of a hobby horse for me, because as far as I'm concerned, in any drama that you're doing, any story that has actual conflict between the characters, you're going to lead into some social violence, really. I mean, you're going to have characters really confronting each other and being very aggressive. And I don't like telling people to do that without giving them a structure in which to do it, because that's just asking for badness. Mm-hmm. That's asking for people to misunderstand what is in character and what is out character, and you know, wondering if they're being bullied by other characters or other players at the table. And that's just bad news. So I like to have social mechanics involved that kind of give you a framework and a structure so that you always know that you are still playing the game. Mm-hmm. You are not bullying somebody into doing something.
Right.
So we have social mechanics, and we needed to make sure that it wasn't, I rolled better than you, so now you have to do what I say.
Sure.
Because that would kill almost every character in the show and make them completely uninteresting. Mm-hmm. Lex will tell you all of his secret plans. Clark will tell you that he's an alien, etc. So what we figured out was that one of the themes of the show is this choice that all the characters keep getting thrust in their face, which is you can give in with whatever somebody's trying to get you to do, mm-hmm. or you can fight on and risk getting hurt. And so we designed the game such that whenever you're rolling dice between characters and not, you know, just running and jumping and those sorts of roles, mm-hmm. When you're rolling those dice between characters, every die roll is a choice. Do I want to keep rolling dice and possibly get hurt doing this, or do I want to give in? Mm-hmm. And that really opened up a lot of very cool play. I'm really, really lucky in that I have a weekly playtest group that we get together. And of course, by weekly, I mean two or three times a month.
Right.
But we get together regularly, at the very least. Mm-hmm. I'm able to test stuff exhaustively. So we made our spinoff of Smallville, which is Sherecroft Academy.
Mm-hmm.
And we have played, I think we are on session 8, and that's not counting the character generation session.
Mm-hmm.
And it really is impressive, I say in retrospect, how much that fight on or give in decision can fuel play. We do a whole lot of very different things. We do fights, sure. We do arguments, sure. But we also do chase scenes, and we do one-upping each other and impressing people. We have conflicts because this show is superpowers and drama, mm-hmm. and we're our Sherecroft Academy. We've got teenagers, so we're at that end of the pool.
Right.
So we have conflicts over take me to formal.
Okay.
And it's great because we have this thing that's not really an argument, but it's a relatively manipulative character trying to get this other character to take her to formal. Mm-hmm. And we got this great back and forth, and every step of the system added more story stuff and made the episode very rich and full without having to make it about hit points and fighting and arguments.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And just to be clear for our listeners, obviously,
yeah.
Is this still using the Cortex system that Margaret Weiss Productions is famous for?
Yeah. The really cool thing about Cortex is that with every single published iteration, mm-hmm. it changes and gets better.
Right.
And most recently, Smallville, we call what Smallville runs on, we call it Cortex K. Mm-hmm. Leverage runs on Cortex L.
Right.
And they're variant systems, but they keep the basic die mechanic, and they just apply that die mechanic in new ways. Mm-hmm. So you've got different stats that are rated in die sizes, same as always. You roll them in a pool, you total them up, and then you got your result. One of the slight differences is that now your die pool can be any number of dice, but you're only going to total the top two. Mm-hmm. And then you can spend plot points to add in more dice and stuff like that. But
right.
It's a really neat mechanic as far as you pick and choose which dice you're going to roll, and there's this nice little bottleneck that means that no matter how many dice you roll, you're still going to add just two together. Mm-hmm. So that, mechanics and probability wise, it narrows the range of results to a really nice, manageable sweet spot where you get a lot of conflicts and back and forth, and sometimes you have massive failures, and sometimes you have massive successes, and it all happens just about the right frequency that we want it to happen.
Right. Okay. Excellent. Excellent. Now, and also to be clear for our listeners and whatnot, this is the first and foremost. This is not a superhero game. This is not a four color, comic book type game. Correct.
This is not the game that you play to see who wins in a fight, Spider-Man or the Hulk.
Right.
Because that game's been done. Mm-hmm. Very well, many times over. You've got champions, you've got mutants and masterminds, you've got mm-hmm. Heroes Unlimited, you've got GURPS supers. There's tons of options for that.
Right.
And honestly, it would be kind of stupid to make another one.
Sure.
The world does not need another superhero game on that thing. But it is very much a superhero game. It's just a superheroes and drama game. Mm-hmm. And we've worked really hard to really couple those together so that the superpowers are relevant to the drama and the drama is relevant to the superpowers. Mm-hmm. So that it all mixes together and makes a seamless whole.
Mm-hmm. It sounds like you guys really focused on making a game that doesn't focus on superpowers. Because that's not really the focus of the TV show.
It's one of the two focuses.
Right.
Foci, rather.
Yes, sure.
Because the superpowers are important, and a lot of the drama is fueled by the superpowers themselves or just the existence of superpowers. Or, you'll have sure. entire plot lines that are about Clark as an alien.
Right.
And you won't – the drama that you get from that, you wouldn't have otherwise without the superpowers.
Sure.
But it's not a superpower fetish game. It's not where you're like, oh, I made this guy – I have this character build that he does X, Y, and Z together, and it's awesome.
Sure.
Actually, let me revise that. When you say X, Y, and Z, you're talking about the superpowers. In this game, you do say, I have this great character build that does X, Y, and Z, and it's awesome. But the X, Y, and Z that you're talking about is, I made Lois Lane, and she has these distinctions that A, she gets plot points when she gets herself in big trouble, mm-hmm. and B, she can give those plot points to other characters when she insults them.
Right.
Which is, that's Lois, right? Mm-hmm. She gets herself into trouble, and then when somebody comes and saves her, she insults them. But that gives them plot points, and then they get to be more awesome later.
Sure. And for the benefit of our listeners who might not be familiar with Cortex, can you explain a bit what the plot points are?
Plot points are a game currency that basically allow you to swing things in your favor. Mm-hmm. In Smallville, you use them to roll more dice, to add more dice to your result, to trigger your superpowers, your special effects, as they are called, and to do some other things like create a new relationship with a character you're in a scene with or mm-hmm. stuff like that. So basically, they are the basic currency of the game that you spend to do cool stuff.
Sure. And as far as the sort of setting information of the game, is it more geared towards your playing, you know, Clark and Chloe and, you know, those characters, or is there, it sounds like you do have options in there for playing original stuff.
The default is actually you are doing a spin-off of Smallville.
Okay.
We have the main leads statted up and in the book, obviously. And you can pull those right out of the book and play.
Sure.
And we assume that especially people who are picking up the book and the first time they want to play it, that's what they'll do for the one shot, just one session, and they get a taste of it. But really, people are going to want to make their own characters. Mm-hmm. So the campaign creation, character creation, and all of that is geared around, so what's your spinoff going to be? Are you going to play in Keystone City, or are you going to play in Metropolis in the year 3000 and play the Legion of Superheroes? Mm-hmm. Are you going to pick a random superhero and do their young years?
Do their Smallvilleization, essentially. Yeah.
Exactly.
Okay. You might have answered this at least a little bit, but I'm a bit curious. How is it that you looked at balancing? Because one of the balancing the situation where you might have just one person playing a character with superpowers. Versus, you know, you have other characters, you know, like in the show, it's you Clark has his superpowers, and then there's everyone else. How is it that you sort of tackle that to make it a bit more really playable for the not really playable, but really to make it more really to make it more appealing to people who aren't going to be playing the guy with the superpowers.
Right. How do we make it so it doesn't suck to play Lois?
Right. Correct.
That was a really big thing for me going in. I really wanted to make sure that we had a game system where, first of all, it was interesting to play a character without powers.
Sure.
And B, the powered characters did not overpower the characters without.
Mm-hmm.
When we did that in a number of ways. The first and the biggest is that when you prepare an episode to play,
mm-hmm.
what you are doing as the, we call the GM watchtower. When you are watchtower, you are trying to figure out ways to play with the relationships between the main characters.
Right.
That's your goal. So if one plot might be, Lex Luthor has unleashed some metahumans on something over there and something's blowing up. Oh no. And maybe that's going to key into how Clark and Oliver interact and how they deal with those types of problems.
Mm-hmm.
But your plot B might be that Chloe's dad shows up and wants to know why she hasn't been calling.
Mm-hmm.
And he gets Lois and Clark to help him get Chloe out of the house once in a while. Which is very much the show,
mm-hmm.
Produces really entertaining play because you juxtapose the things blowing up with, come on, Chloe, get out of the house every once in a while.
Right.
So that's the main thing is that the episode creation guidelines and rules really make sure that the situation you're creating involves everybody, mm-hmm. and everybody gets enmeshed in the super stuff and in the mundane stuff. We also did a lot of balancing on the character creation process. We have this fantastic chart thing because you make a character by following a pathway and charting out your character's life path.
Mm-hmm.
And it is totally engineered so that if you are really gung-ho and you want to be the guy with all the superpowers, you can totally do that,
right.
But you're going to be really bad at everything else. Mm-hmm. And amusingly bad, like get into trouble bad, because you will still you will pick up traits in that process that get you into trouble.
Sure. It's like, yes, you can pick up that bus, but...
Exactly. You can pick up that bus, but you have this other trait that gives you a plot point when you do something unfortunate.
Mm-hmm.
You have impulsive at D4, which means if you ever use it, it'll be worth a whole whoopty D4. And it also comes with this trigger that says when you act impulsively, you get a plot point.
Right.
So congratulations, you built the guy with all the superpowers. To use your special effects, you need plot points. The way you get plot points is by doing stuff that's going to get everybody else to chase after you and fix your problems. Which is Clark, basically.
Right. Excellent. Excellent. All right. And I'm always curious as to how working with licensed products really sort of works. Is this the first time – it sounds like this is the first time you've really worked with a licensed property like this. Have you noticed any huge differences or anything like that?
It's very different. Well, it's very interesting. I don't know if it's very different.
Sure.
It's kind of odd the first time that you get notes back from DC.
Mm-hmm.
DC would like this changed. Oh, okay, sure, DC. I'll just change that for you. But DC and...
CW?
Yes, the CW as well. I was trying to remember the guy's name. But in any case, DC and CW have been really great collaborators with us. We are very lucky in that our licensing liaison mm-hmm. gets it.
Right.
He does not
that's an important
ask us
piece
why
of
we
it.
Don't. Yeah,
it's always very important. Just talking to some of the other people that have worked on licensed stuff, that is huge.
Yeah, he is not trying to get us to make another Mutants and Masterminds or Champions or whatever. He understands right. that we are really putting together the drama and the superpowers.
Mm-hmm.
And we've got fantastic support on the production end. The photos and the stills and all of that that go into making the book and putting illustrations in, they've been great. I believe we've even got some of the illustrators from the Smallville fan magazine. Oh, that's cool. that is produced by CW.
Mm-hmm.
But the guys who do the art there are doing some of the art in the Smallville RPG, which is great.
Cool, cool. Now, since this is really, to memory, this is the only the first sort of Cortex system to utilize any kind of like superpowers like this. How did you go about tackling that aspect?
It was a long process.
I bet.
Because we had to go back and forth trying to figure out exactly how we wanted to implement it, how we wanted to make it work like the show, how we wanted to do it such that it doesn't totally unbalance the non-powered characters,
right?
How we wanted to implement it so that it was interesting for the story and not just I can fly,
mm-hmm.
which is a really important thing that's really easy to overlook. So, I mean, I can't even remember how many iterations of stuff that we went through.
Right.
But the basics that it boiled down to is that your power gives you a die when you're using the power.
Mm-hmm.
So when you've got super strength, hey, when you're lifting stuff, you get another die. And it also gives you a special effect,
mm-hmm.
which is you spend a plot point to do something really cool. And the special effects are uniformly flashy, colorful things that you don't really want to be rolling dice for anyway. So, like in the season 9 first episode, Clark catches a metro train that's come off of its tracks and is careening across the sky. And you shouldn't roll dice for that. Clark should just do that. So
sure.
you spend a plot point and you do the feat of massive strength. Hooray.
Mm-hmm.
And that does not interact with the contests, the back and forth between characters.
Sure.
The back and forth between characters. It is story fuel, usually. Mm-hmm. It is stuff that happens, and then there are conflicts about it.
Right.
Or you have a conflict about a thing, and then you use the superpower, or the special effect of the superpower. When you want to have, when you have the fist fight and you want to use your super strength, that's where the die for your power comes in. And actually, I should say, that's when the die for your ability comes in. That's one of the many little things that we got as notes from DC, is that they are abilities, they are not powers, which makes sense once you think about it, because the DC universe is
right
crazy. Well,
that's also how they sort of refer to it in the show too, come to think of it.
Yes. Well, sometimes, and then sometimes not. It depends on which season and what episode you're talking about.
Sure.
but I mean, when you think about it, like when you talk about Marvel, their powers, because Marvel has a relatively self-contained way that their powers come about, right? I mean, 90% of them are mutants.
Right.
But in DC, that's not the case. In DC, you've got aliens, you've got magicians, you've got people with a lot of special training, you've got people who have, you know, been hit by crazy science experiments, whatever. Right. So coming from such a broad source, abilities is a more appropriate term than powers.
Mm-hmm. Okay, cool. And when is the Smallville RPG due out?
I believe it's due out around Gen Con.
So they're aiming for the Gen Con release, hopefully. Oh, that's cool. Excellent, excellent. And so far in the last several Cortex games, there's sort of been an overall theme to the book. Is there such a theme like that in this one? Because I know, like in Supernatural, it was, you know, like a how-to book written by Dean or something like that. And you know, the Serenity book was a bit more in character type of thing. Is this book tackled sort of in the same way?
It is written in the voice of Watchtower and Chloe, but it is not actually Chloe who wrote it.
Right.
Because we got into some really weird things when Chloe is writing the book about herself as an example character, right? So, but it is very much written in the sort of snappy dialogue of the show. And
did you find that challenging at all?
Oh, God, no. I found that really liberating. Because it means you get to write rules that are, and then you do this, which is super cool because you get this X, Y, and Z benefit, and it happens all the time. I mean, that's like literally the words you put on the page.
Nice.
And it's really nice to be able to do that instead of relatively stilted formal language that you might find elsewhere.
Uh-huh. Excellent. And is there anything else that about it that you want to talk about, really? So I can't think of anything else that I desperately need to know.
I can system walk indefinitely on stuff. Honestly, do you have enough content for an episode, or would you like me to go off a little more?
We're fine. I mean, you can go on. It can, you know, doesn't matter.
Okay, well, here, we'll do this. Let me tell you about the challenge mechanic, because this is another one of my favorites. So I don't think I've mentioned, but we have tossed out attributes and skills.
Oh, yeah? Oh,
okay. Because we originally had them, and then in our playtests of character creation, we found that when you were getting for your character attributes and skills – and distinctions, which are your things about your character, sort of catch-all, your merits and flaws, your perks and advantages.
Mm-hmm.
So you had advantages. I'm sorry, no. So you had attributes and skills and powers and distinctions. And the attributes and skills were really boring compared to the much more interesting character details and superpowers. Mm-hmm. And we talked about it, and we weren't quite – well, I wasn't quite sure if we really wanted to go there, because – you know, it is a game for the broad spectrum of gamerdom. It's not one of my little indie projects for, you know, my 40 fans. Sure. It's for everybody, and there are a few baseline things that everybody sort of expects, and attributes and skills are sort of in there. Mm-hmm. But Cam really seized the opportunity and said, no, attributes and skills are boring. Let's ditch them and see what happens. So the things that would be covered under attributes and skills sort of got mashed up and put into distinctions. So instead of having a high agility score, you might take the agile distinction. But because it is now a distinction, it gives you these neat die tricks that are really interesting for developing your character and making the story interesting. So it's a great move. Everything that you might have in attributes and skills is now implemented in a more interesting way. Mm-hmm. And to replace the attributes and skills that you always reach for, right? You always grab your attribute and skill, and then whatever else is sort of a habit that a lot of gamers have. In order to replace those, we put in values and relationships.
Right.
So you've got your justice value and your love value and your duty value and whatever else, and those are all rated in dice. Mm-hmm. And you have a statement about what justice means to you, what love means to you, what duty means to you. And you roll that die when you are forwarding your understanding of that value. And relationships work pretty much the same way. You have relationships with different characters. They're rated in dice, and you have a statement that is what you understand that character to be all about, right? So mm-hmm. You have Clark, who has the relationship with Lex, up to something.
Right.
Because Lex is always up to something.
Sure.
And you roll in the die whenever Lex is up to something. And that's your go-to dice. Your what value are you doing, and what relationship is what you are doing about? Mm. That was a poor way of putting it. Those are your go-to dice. You have the value. What is important about the thing that you are doing, right. And relationship. Who is important about what you're doing, and that could be who you are competing against, who are you competing for, who you are trying to save, who you are acting despite their influence, etc. And what that does is give a really tight focus to the game,
right?
Because you've got stuff about your values are justice and duty and love and power and glory and truth. Mm-hmm. So the game starts focusing on those themes. And the thing is, 90% of the time, well, not 90% of the time, mm-hmm. we'll say 70% of the time, your statement, because it's pretty central to your character, is pretty much how your character goes about things.
Right.
But over the course of an episode, sometimes situations are different than what you would assume they would be, mm-hmm. which we like to call character growth, and it's a good thing. But in order to handle that, what we have is the challenge mechanic. And you say, this is about Lex, but Lex is doing something that looks noble and altruistic and whatever else, which is not what I have down for my relationship with Lex. So what I'm going to do is challenge that relationship. Mm-hmm. And I get 3 of those dice. So if I had Lex at D8, I get 3 D8s to roll into my pool. Mm-hmm. And because I'm challenging it, is Lex actually doing something selfless? And I roll dice and whatever, and it goes into the contest rules. But that relationship is stepped back. It goes from D8 to D6 for the rest of the episode.
Right.
And a D8 goes into my growth pool, which is the important bit. When you get to the end of an episode, you take all of your relationships and your values that you challenged, and you can put them back up to where they were. You can put it back from D6 to D8 if you rewrite the statement about that value or relationship.
Right.
So your views about people and about your values change as a result of what happens in the show. And in addition to that, your growth pool is what you use to get new stats. So you want dice in your growth pool, so you want to challenge things.
Right.
So every episode is all about pointing fingers at each other and saying, you are the guy who does this. Oh, wait, maybe you aren't the guy who does that. Or I am all about justice and justice means this.
Right.
Oh, wait, maybe justice is something else. And it is this great engine for fueling character growth and character development, which, again, is much like the show. You have relationships that flip-flop 6 times over the course of 8 episodes. And that's really something that we were aiming for, and I think we hit really well.
Very cool. Very cool. Speaking a little generically, since you have done a lot of work, game design and working on stuff like that. Just speaking from your point of view, what is it that when you sit down on a new project, what is it that you start at? What is it that you start with?
I start by identifying the social dynamic that I want at the table, which is different from the social dynamic between the characters, is different from what the setting entails. I really want to nail down what are the people doing when they play the game. Okay. So in Smallville, what the people are doing is getting themselves into trouble, calling their assumptions into question,
right,
and doing cool stuff.
Excellent. Excellent. Now, sort of looking at wrapping things up here shortly, sort of getting to my last couple questions that I ask everybody, is there anything on the horizon, whether for Smallville, whether it's for really anything out there that you are excited about or that you think we should be excited about?
Well, Smallville has, in addition to the core book that's coming out on Gen Con, it's going to have 2 supplements that are coming
Excellent.
Out really quickly. We have the High School Yearbook, which is going to be a book dedicated to basically doing seasons 1 through 4.
Right.
Is how to play Smallville in a high school setting.
Right.
So that's going to have, you know, rules for corsages, I think. And then the other source book is going to be the Watchtower Report or the Watchtower Files. I can't remember the title. Now I feel bad that I don't remember what the title is. But that's going to be a lot of NPCs, a lot of powers, a lot of sort of advanced episode building guidelines, and basically things to take your game to the next level. It's sort of the advanced suite of rules.
Excellent. And along those lines, how much is the core book going to cover as far as source material for the show?
Okay, so first of all, source material is not my department. So I'm speaking from memory about what other people are writing.
Okay.
It has a lot of information about Metropolis, a good portion of information about Smallville, a lot of details about the show continuity.
Okay.
What has happened in the most recent seasons has a show-by-show synopsis. And for the first 4 to 6 seasons, has a season-by-season synopsis. So it's a lot of this is what's happened in the show.
Which is why the yearbook's going to be coming out with more detail on that.
And the yearbook will have a lot more detail on
It sounds like it's geared more towards the latter half of the show right now.
Well, current fans of the show want Metropolis, and right. people who want to do the throwback game, more power to them. And honestly, I love the throwback game, high school, because playing teenagers is great because they do stupid stuff, and it's awesome.
Well, my other question, and you sort of touched on it a little bit here, was when was the last time that you had a chance, because we're all gamers, we love it, when was the last chance you had to, that you sat down, rolled some dice, and what was it?
Last night.
Ooh, what'd you play? What'd you run?
Well, actually, you know what? Last night we did not play Sherecroft because two of our players bailed, so we played Carcassonne.
You know, and so that is a classic game that I have never played.
Carcassonne is fun and different, and it occupies a very specific niche.
Sure.
So the last time I actually rolled dice was last Wednesday.
Mm-hmm. And that was for Smallville?
That was for, Smallville. And tomorrow I'm running Smallville at Strategicon, so...
Oh, yeah, excellent. Where is Strategicon? That's out there.
Strategicon is the local LA conventions. It happens three times a year. Very cool. They're at the LAX hotels. They're a fantastic little gamer con. Yeah, it's one of those nice, low pressure, walk into a hotel, play games for 3 days, go home. It's great.
That is actually exactly what we're. I'm organizing. We're organizing out here. It's a gaming convention like that. Community College, so
that's CantCon, right?
Yes, CantCon.
Excellent. Yes, I believe Chris Perrin was just talking about attending.
Oh, excellent. Good. We definitely want more people to come. 3 days of just playing games, and that's all that we're looking for. So,
yeah. In your what's on the horizon question?
Mm-hmm.
Also from Margaret Weiss is the Leverage game that's coming out very shortly, which. Involves Rob Donahue and Fred Hicks and Matt Forbeck, so that's going to be great.
We talked to Matt a while back, actually.
Cool. And that's going to have a couple of supplements. Mm-hmm. And then as far as what I'm doing, I've got a Houses of the Blooded supplement that I am doing next. And then I am probably going to be kicking Agora and Full Light Full Steam 2nd Edition into gear.
Very cool.
And if I'm really, really lucky, I'll get all of that done this year.
Oh, excellent, excellent. And that's the Full Light Full Steam is through your company, correct?
Correct.
Excellent, excellent. And we can hopefully keep an eye out for some updates on that. Is there a site that people can go to for some more information on that? And but also Smallville.
Yeah, Margaret Weiss is margaretweissproductions.com. Mm-hmm. Weiss has one S, which I always forget, but... I'm better about that. And then my website is callistipress.com.
And how do you spell that?
KALLISTIPRESS.com. Or you can just go to joshroby.com.
Joshroby.com. All right. And the last question I have goes a bit more to the hobby itself. Is one thing that the Gamers Haven is really... really all about is sort of spreading the love of the hobby. That's why we're doing CantCon, and that's why we do the show. My question to you is, what is it about this hobby that you love?
That I love? I love the interactive nature with my friends and fiction. I consume a ton of fiction and television and prose and whatever else every day, but it's really nice to be able to make my own with my friends and make something that is personal and specific to us, which you can't find on television.
Sure. And if you were trying to get someone into this hobby, what is it that you would want to tell them?
If they're a big TV buff, if they like watching television, I would sell them on, we're going to make our own television show. We're going to do all the things that you love watching on television, except we're going to do them the way that you keep wanting to see them happen. because really, I cannot find a better model for what role-playing games are like than television. Television is really spot on.
Oh, and, sure. Especially lately. You know,
oh, yeah. And we have Matt Wilson in Primetime Adventures to thank for pointing out exactly how perfect it is.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And speaking along those lines, really, it sounds like Smallville is would be a great way to do that. So,
I sure hope so.
I mean, it sounds like a very cool thing, and I know I'm my co-hosts aren't big Smallville fans. I can't get them to watch the show, but I sort of got hooked into it after season two. So,
right, you know, that's one of the curious things about this game is that my playtest group, only one of the guys used to watch it and doesn't anymore. And the others, when I told them it's Smallville, they kind of raised their eyebrows. Mm-hmm. But we did, we played the in the book sample episode.
Right.
And they loved it because it, you just get to wreak carnage on each other as you, as you confront the problem. And then we made our own spinoff and the buy-in was even greater. Nice. And then most recently, in fact, last week when we were rolling dice last, we play tested the character creation / campaign creation that has been revised since we did it the first time. We wanted to test it to make sure it worked.
Right.
And we started off with, okay, what's a totally throwaway premise that nobody cares about? We're just going to use that and run with it so we can make sure all the mechanics work. And we'll make a knockoff Vampire Diaries. It'll be terrible. And we got to the end of it, and we looked at each other and said, "This is so terrible. We must play it because it will be awesome." So I really do think that a lot of people who might raise their eyebrow at Smallville would really get a lot out of the game if they jumped in.
Cool. That's excellent. That is excellent. And as with all of Margaret Weiss's stuff, it's I'm assuming it's going to be hardcover, full color, hopefully.
Hardcover, full color, beautiful. Our layout diva is doing fantastic stuff.
Excellent, excellent. Well, we will look forward to seeing that at or around Gen Con, I hope. So.
Yes, it'll be great.
Thank you for taking the time out to talk to me tonight.
Thank you for interviewing me.
Gamers Haven Incorporated proudly presents A Thousand Monkeys production of a Pinnacle Entertainment game. Deadlands Reloaded. Enough Room to Die. Featuring the Gamers Haven regulars. A campaign 6 years in the making. Secret societies, bloodthirsty demons. The story's got it all. But can the heroes unravel the plot before it's too late? One thing's for certain is they're gonna either have enough room to live or enough room to die. Available for download only at GamersHavenPodcast.com. Been listening to the Gamers Haven Podcast. Subscribe to the show by visiting our website at GamersHavenPodcast.com, where you can also discuss all things gaming in our forum, drop us an email, or just peruse our episode archives. You can also call us toll-free and leave a message to be played on the show by dialing 1-877-416-1270. That's toll-free 877-416-1270. On our website, you'll also find our actual play podcasts chronicling our misadventures through all things role-playing. Enjoy what you hear? Why not support the Gamers Haven by purchasing Gamers Haven merchandise, visiting our affiliates, or just by clicking on our donate button? The Gamers Haven podcast is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial, Share Alike 3.0 United States license, some rights reserved. Some music in this podcast is used with permission of Joe Hero Band at joehero.com. This is A Thousand Monkeys production.
This concludes the broadcast from World Control.